plus minus.
Curry, way downtown, bang! Bang! Oh, what a shot from Curry!
Tim Kawakami deserves all the credit then.
Plus minus.
Curry driving again.
Tell Marcus that he asked that question about my defense. You hear that, Marcus?
Anthony, you know me well, buddy. Y'all have a great night. I think you got the highest plus minus in the season in NBA history.
Welcome to Warriors Plus Minus. We are a week away from the season opener, and we've got quite a bit to talk about, but we must begin every show from now on until it becomes very clear we shouldn't, talking about the greatness of Jordan Poole, because this
people are going to get tired of this.
You cannot get tired of Jordan Poole.
All you do is praise Jordan Poole.
Slater, what do we see from Jordan Poole in our latest preseason affair? Anything new? Anything?
Same as always. 28 and, like, I don't know, 20-something minutes. Yeah. I asked pregame Steve, and he was like, you know, we haven't fully discussed it as a staff, but it's hard to envision taking him out of the lineup the way he's playing. Nah, I mean, like, he's just – I mean, I think one of Kerr's better answers on it in the preseason, somebody asked, like, what's the significance of him starting? He's like, he's one of our best players. Like, he's just going to start. And that's – I mean, what is he right now going into the season? Like, their
fourth best player?
Third or fourth best player?
And, by the way, and fitting in with the starters, right? That could be an issue. Like, hey, what are you doing pulling up from 35? And I saw Andre kind of had a little bit of a smart alecky answer to that, which is typically Andre, and we know he's great with the young players, but he tries to keep them in line sometimes. But if Steph and Draymond are okay with it, and Steve Kerr is okay with it, he's making a few of them. I don't know if he's making every one of those, but then you put your most talented player out there and let him play a lot of minutes. That's how you get him more minutes. Like, you know, that's how you get him from 22 to 28 to 33 minutes, is to start him and then play it from there. I think. You know, he won't play all his minutes with Steph and Draymond, because you do want him as that second unit. I mean, they finally, what we've always been saying, second unit initiator, somebody who can score when Steph is not on the court, and that is Jordan Poole now. So he's going to get both roles. Start, get out of there, and then lead that second. Maybe you take Wiggins out, right? I mean, I haven't seen Wiggins in any kind of formulation of a second unit. Maybe Wiggins is out of it.
Like, Wiggins didn't even play last game. He wasn't even at the open scrimmage. He's dealing with, like, a little bit of a sore knee. So we'll see on that. But, yeah, I mean, Poole made his preseason statement of what he was going to be in the first 2 minutes in Portland. I mean, you flip the game on. This is the first time we've seen them under the big lights. And he took, like, three 28-footers within, like, 3 minutes of the game starting. And it's like, oh, okay, this is the green light he's been given after this summer. So it's obvious what they're doing with him. I mean, the big thing is, like, he's at this point, like, I think locked into, like, 30 to 35 minutes a night.
I'm sure Steve Kerr would like to see a bit more improvement defensively. You can get by him off the dribble better than you should for somebody who's stronger and a pretty good athlete. But you got to imagine that's where time with Andre Iguodala comes in, just over time, giving him little tidbits. But you can still get by him, which is, you know, probably going to – if you got Draymond back there, if you got Looney and, you know, these great kind of help defenders, it's a easier pill to swallow, especially if you're giving 25. But that's got to be where Steve is pointing. I'm watching because, you know, we're talking next level star here. You guys are late on the train here, but – we're talking a big star, so you kind of got to watch all the facets of the game, Slater.
When he becomes one of the best 10 players in the league, is that what you're saying, MT?
Makes that progression. You got to chronicle the whole journey.
First team All-NBA or second team All-NBA? That is the question here. I'll tell you what, it's a larger view of what Steve Kerr and the Warriors are going to try to do, at least until Klay gets back. And maybe even when Klay's back, they're going to outscore people. And then that has not been kind of the Warriors' thing, obviously, with Durant and Steph and Klay. You can just do it no matter what, but there always was a defense. You know, he thought defense first. Kurt thought, how do I put this together defensively first? And now, I don't think they're thinking that, and clearly they're not thinking that, because who's guarding Damian Lillard? I don't know, and I don't think right now they have an answer for that. Maybe they throw Steph at him, you know, for a little bit and with a lot of help, but that 15-5 run, I mean, how many times have we heard Kerr mention it and other guys, like, this is what they want to do, at least until they get Klay back, and then they see where Klay is, you know, can he defend these guys or not? Then they have to start figuring it out. I'm going to posit this thing. Like, I think, and I've seen, you know, relatively critical evaluations of what their season prospects are, and I understand all of them, but I think that kind of discounts the 15-5 finish, and we all saw it, so maybe we're overvaluing it, maybe the Warriors are overvaluing it, but I think that's who they are. I think they're going to, maybe not 15-5, but they're going to be tough to play in the regular season. I think we're seeing that even in the preseason. They're going to spread the floor, they're going to run around, you're going to have to try to guard Curry, and then he's going to flip the ball to someone else, and there's Otto Porter standing still at the three-point line in the corner. And I don't know if this is a playoff kind of thing. I think, though, they're going to be a lot better than they were last year. Maybe not 15-5 again for the whole season, but I think this is looking like a pretty good regular season team.
The roster just fits significantly better. I mean, that's that around not Curry.
Not defensively, maybe, but...
They were fifth defensively last year. I don't think they're going to be fifth, but they're in a league now that you even look at their rating last year. It wasn't even a good defensive rating. They're just in this league where everybody's defensive rating is terrible. So, I mean, they could be not that great defensively and still like ninth defensively or 11th, something like that. You know, maybe it tumbles down into third. Yeah. But that's the big thing. Can they get 20th up to like eighth offensively? And I do think that's like probably the ballpark they could get to.
Have you sliced what were they offensively in the last 20 games?
I believe they were like eighth. I think they were first in defense, eighth in rating. And they were like first in net rating down the stretch. You know, again, two Thunder home games down the stretch. There was some like just giveaway games, some tanking games. The Pelicans came in and didn't even play Zion. I think that's bloated a little bit. But yeah, I mean, that's the big thing. I think what they learned down the stretch is like they need to commit all into the Curry, Kerr, Draymond stylistically. And then they built the roster that way. So yeah, I do think they're better this season than they were last season. I think we can already like kind of see how that's forming.
Three preseason games. The Warriors are averaging 57 three-pointers at a 38% clip. Now, they're not going to suddenly flip a switch and become a different team in the regular season, but are we watching Steve Kerr give way to the Houston Rockets style of play he so vehemently detested?
He's gonna say it's not.
I understand Rockets, what right? he's gonna say.
He's gonna say, 57
threes.
He's gonna say we're not, not dribbling into threes. Not, you know, James Harden stuff. It's set up. You know, it's driving kick. But yes, the way it's gonna look on the box score, they're gonna put. I think we all agree they're gonna put over 50 threes up a game, right? I don't think there's any chance they're gonna be less than that.
50 is really, really high as an average, but I mean, I think it's pretty clear they're going to go way higher than last season and highest in franchise history.
What was last year? Like 35, I need to go look. Yeah, I think it's going to be close to 50. Now we'll see if Bielitsa and Porter hit a wall or get hurt.
But then Clay's
like
coming.
Eight right there. Yeah, then Clay's coming. So I'm saying it based on just what they've got right now, what we're seeing, what their best offense is. They're shooting more threes and twos. You know, I mean, who's going to shoot those twos? There's not that many guys who ideally will shoot a ton of twos. And Wiggins might be the one, and he's going to put up threes too.
The leader in the league last year, which was the Jazz, only took 43. And I say only, like this is a ton, but they took 43.
Maybe not guaranteed to take 50, but it's...
The Rockets' high was 45-4.
Okay, maybe I spoke too soon with the over 50.
I think some of it is, and it was funny, they threw up 60. That's what's really kind of like jumped this, you know, average is in the first game they did 69, which is like the NBA record for a game is 70. And they had 69 against Portland. And I was talking to somebody like, well, you know, man, that's crazy. You guys threw up that many threes. And they're part of it. It was like, you know, Portland's defense, they're trying to like learn this blitzing scheme. Yeah. And they were just giving up open three after open three. So like opening night against the Lakers, like, you know, that's a strong, powerful, like well-schemed defense that's not going to let you just like jack open threes all game.
Yeah, and by the way, yeah, in this, like, teams usually put up about 80 shots a game, I think. So 69 threes is a lot of threes. Let's say there be about the same amount of threes as twos. I think that's about where they're headed. And maybe that's more efficient for them. Like, again, who's going to be shooting their really efficient twos? I don't know who's shooting the really efficient.
You see, in that Laker game, part of because how the Lakers defended him, but Steph was like 3 of 13 for three, but he was 9-11 from two.
Yeah, he's going to be the twos because he's going to.
Don't
be
forget
one
about mid-range Wiggins. Open
spaces, mid-range Wiggins. Well, that's 20-foot step back. The other guy, but the guy who can make twos if he's healthy and playing well is Wiseman, right? That's kind of their twos guy. Now he shoots threes too, but he would be your more efficient at the top end of his playing scale. In shooting twos, I think if they need to get twos down the road in a playoff format or whatever, Wiseman is the guy that is most likely to get them, but that's not how they're set up now. And they pulled, you know, he wasn't on the floor at 15-5 last season, and that's when it took off. He and Oubre came off the floor, and they go 15-5. So again, I think this is a good regular season construct for them, way better than last season. We're not going to see those ridiculously terrible games we saw at the start of last season. They're going to run into problems rebounding, and they're going to run into problems defending great, you know, great perimeter players. As Steve Kerr might say, welcome to real life in the NBA. That's most teams, and I think they're going to be one of those most teams. Like, they're going to be Portland-like, you know, and they've kind of scoffed at Portland in past years because Portland could not defend them. Well, they're going to be a little Portland-like, and that's the new NBA.
Anyway. Our friends at Light Years called them the Golden State Jazz. Part of the correlation, I do think what's potentially, like, what people are sleep on is that it's not that just that they're shooting a lot. They're still at a really high clip. It's really up there, like 38%, 39%. The Jazz did that last year. They shot 43%. But made 39% of them. Houston never got that high. Houston hung around at 34s, 35s. So to increase the volume and stay in that 38 to 40 range, that's tough to guard, especially in the regular season. That's worth some wins, a handful of wins, if you could kind of shoot that percentage. So I do see it going up over 40, but if it's the percentage. If they're knocking them down at that clip, that's going to be a problem. But we see that every year with the Jazz. The problem, you know, now when the playoffs come, yeah, it's a whole different story.
Get to the playoffs.
But at that point, they're leaning on Steph, Clay, Draymond, playoff experience. They kind of got another bag.
But, hey, but it's a playoff drought right now.
Yeah, that's exactly. You got to get there.
They have made the playoffs.
You got to get there. And that helps. 38% is good.
Welcome to NBA reality, you know. They got to get to the playoffs. They can't be sitting about, oh, we want this seed or that seed, or it'd be great if we play this style then play that style. They got to scramble to get as many wins as they can, which is what they did at the end of last season, and see if they can play it. And just again, this is just from watching preseason games and me not even watching the last one, I have to fully admit, just looking at the box score and reading the great coverage of it. But it still feels like that's going to be their best way. Again, we'll see what Porter and Bielitsa and these guys that we're not quite sure of really do, and we'll see who plays the minutes, and we'll see if, you know, if getting strafed by opponent guards at some point really might just cause Kerr to say, okay, wait a minute, you know, Ron Adams might grimace 10 too many times for Kerr, have to figure out something else.
That's the Avery Bradley, that's
a conundrum, but though, like, was he terrible in the last game? I see him nothing on the stat line.
He just hasn't won the job that they were clearly kind of trying to be like, come on, man.
So that opens it up for GP too, right?
It does, and he's playing Tuesday night.
Let's go, GP two. I'm about to be two for two out here.
God, if Marcus can get Poole in the starting lineup,
I'm about to be I'm actually very surprised by Avery Bradley. Like, he's been even more. He's been underwhelming, and the problem is
pass.
Yeah,
passive
the problem is
offense,
he doesn't. He doesn't have confidence in his offense at all. And I remember him being, like, at least more reliable sticking the open shot. It feels like he's getting that open shot. Porter's hitting it. Belize's hitting it. Like, even Jordan Poole's hitting it. Even JTA started hitting a couple. He's the only guy who's not hitting it. And that's his leg up, is that he can give you something on offense, too. Yeah, I expected more out of him.
It's hard to play him with Draymond at the same time, right? I mean, and it's hard to play him with JTA at the same time. Then you start getting into, okay, how do the pieces fit? If he can't shoot reliably, then you can't have another non-offensive player on the court with him. And that's what the Warriors do. They always have another one, you know, non-offensive player, and then you get stuck.
At this point, who would you rather play in those minutes, Avery Bradley or Moses Moody?
Moody from the long term, but one thing I'll say about Brad is three preseason games. Like, anyone can, like, not shoot it that well for three preseason games, but you do go look at his, like, career log, and, you know, when he was in Boston, 14.9 points per game 1 year, 13.9, 15.2, 16.3. Like, this guy was, like, a legit scorer.
But we've seen that
thing.
Legit scores
but,
come
but
to
we've
the Warriors,
also seen so it kind of disappear. Trying to prove he can get back to that.
That's what I was going to say, and that is what you don't see. You don't see anyone capable of being, like, a double-digit per-game score anymore beyond just, like, does he stick the open three? Like, he can't do a lot of the other stuff he used to do offensively either.
Physically, he's just not explosive.
I think we should get to Moody because he was one of the stories of that Laker game. He had three threes in the fourth, really, like, big threes. You know, like, he's The funny thing about his, he's 5 of 6 in the fourth quarter from three the last two games. And it's like mop up minutes, kind of, because he's out there with like more summer league guys, rookies, younger guys, although Dwight Howard and Rondo were out there closing the game. But they are, within the context of the game, huge shots. Like, it's like tie game with 2 minutes left.
Especially in his mind, right? They're big shots to him.
And you know what? He takes them quick, too. That's what I think.
Confidently, like, too.
Yeah, they're not like catch the ball wide open, measure it. It's got to go up. It's like catch it, flip, up it goes. And I think the Warriors like that because it does feel like he's not hesitating. He's not worried, oh, what's Steve Kerr going to say if I miss this? What's Steph and Draymond going to give me a look? Like, you just got to throw it up there. That's what we're seeing out of Jordan Poole. It's not that we've seen these hesitations from very established players when they get to the Warriors because, like, oh, my God, wait, what am I shooting it for? This is the Warriors. Someone else should shoot it. And Moody does not have that.
There was also a couple times where they ran him off the line and he did like 2 dribbles into the lane, went up for a layup, was going to kind of get blocked and did like a curl around pass. So I think it was like Jordan Bell for a layup. And
yeah, he's a way better passer than what I thought.
Yeah, yeah. He's made
now, was
nice
he explosive
passes.
In those though? I mean, he's not very...
No, I mean, he wasn't right? about to he's go not, like hammer no. one on Dwight Howard. But, you know, he attacked Dwight Howard right at his chest. Dwight Howard shockingly came over and hard fouled him because Dwight Howard was out there throwing elbows in preseason.
Yo, he was wild. He caught that live on Bielitsa,
yeah, staring him down.
On belly.
Yeah,
Dwight Howard got into like 5 mini scuffles with like 5 different Warriors players over the course of
in a preseason game.
I mean, that dude caught a lob and was screaming at Bielitsa.
Yeah,
like,
Bielitsa was like, dude, I defend like this is the regular season. And this is the
preseason. Yeah, it's like, dude,
I'm Bielitsa. What are you doing screaming? Come on now.
But Moody caught it in the corner, had a lane, attacked, went right at Dwight Howard. Dwight Howard came over and like chest to chest and like knocked him to the ground. And like clearly Dwight Howard is like much better athlete, you know, the explosion. And Moody will have trouble finishing over guys like that. But I did like the confidence to go at him, draw the foul. He goes in there. He mixes it up. He's crafty with the passes. I mean, Tim, if you rewatch that fourth, like he'll make 2 of them. I don't think we're finished because he's out there playing with Langston Galloway and whoever. But 3 passes that you're like, yeah, that was nice. I was kind of like, I'm surprised you saw that. I think we're going to see over these next 2 preseason games if Kerr believes he's done enough to throw him out there, you know, in the first quarter, in the second quarter. And then we might get a hint that, hey, they're starting to think that maybe Avery Bradley didn't win the job and Moses Moody's got this rotation spot potentially.
And then that would slide GP2 into that fourth
We've
guard
seen
thing.
Moses passing, like, it's come with him at each step. Like, you know, he did it in Arkansas. You get the summer league. He's like, oh, he's a nice passer. And now he's doing it, like, you know, and mop-up minutes in preseason games is coming with him. It feels like it's something that he's carrying with him. And you know Steve Kerr loves that, right? Just dudes who can catch the ball and make a decision, like, on the fly and be able to make the right pass. You know who's the biggest fan probably? It's probably Joe Lacob.
If he drafted him,
Moody is gonna be like, not only is he gonna give him, you know, some playing time or whatever, 14 pick, but he's gonna justify not playing that 15 spot.
I mean,
we got Moody.
And wait a minute, don't have to trade for Bradley Beal. We got Moses Moody.
We got Moody.
That would be interesting. That would be a big move for them. It would be interesting. Like, it'd be one way to win and develop. And there might be another team kind of trying to do that right now. But, you know, I thought it was interesting that Kerr, you know, has compared him to Trevor Ariza, which is a very respected player in the league, a perfect Warriors kind of player, 3 and D. I don't know if I quite see that out of Moody defensively right now, but maybe, you know, he's 19 and stick a few threes. That's the easiest way in any, you know, Warriors decision maker's heart is to stick a few open threes when they're there. Again, didn't we say that from the beginning? Like, obviously between Moody and Kuminga, but even probably over Wiseman at this point, who's going to possibly be in the back end of a real rotation out of all those out of 3 young guys? It's Moody because he does those things that fit the Warriors, just things that fit the Warriors, not necessarily at a higher talent level than the other guys. In fact, he would probably be the least talented of the 3, but just that he fits those things they need. Now, can he be the guy? Okay. Hey, wait a minute, CJ McCollum's kind of going off here, and, you know, we don't have any, you know, we got to throw him out there. Can he do that? Or does it have to be Andre? And Andre would not help them on the 3-point side. So can he be that guy?
We will be right back after a quick word from our sponsors. I've been trying to eat in more often lately, so I signed up for Home Chef. I've had a few packages come in, and being able to feast on a delicious meal without the long prep and cook times is what drew me to Home Chef over all the other guys. Home Chef's meals are effortless, even for someone like me who isn't making it onto Top Chef anytime soon. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. Home Chef has over 30 options a week and serves a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what you're making ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. For a limited time, Home Chef is offering my listeners 18 free meals, plus free shipping on your first box, and free dessert for life at homechef.com/plus. That's homechef.com/plus for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. Homechef.com/plus. Must be an active subscriber to receive the free dessert.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Moody doesn't look like a stopper to me. Moody looks like a really capable team defender, like knows where he's going to be even at his age. You know, he's always making the right rotations. He's active with the hands. He's always got his hands up. He's long. But physically, I mean, I feel like, let's say he, you know, they're playing the Lakers opening night. He's out there against Westbrook. I could see the Lakers like trying to clear the floor and like post him up, Russ, because he's still, you know, athletically not there. And then just strength wise, I mean, he's 19 years old.
And Ariza's a great athlete, by the way.
Oh, well, Ariza was strong. He came in the league strong. And he came from that Baron Davis, UCLA, you know, kind of background. But he wasn't a perfect player either. It's not like, you know, oh, my God, they're putting up this.
But he could be the stopper, right? He had the athletic ability to do it. I don't think that Moody
does. We'll see. I mean, it's interesting that we can even discuss that because, you know, we can't say that about Kuminga. We can't say it about a lot of different people, but they do need those.
What? Kuminga's a stopper. Watch. Yeah,
defensive stopper.
They really, really would have to develop him, but Jonathan Kuminga certainly has the, you know, physical profile.
I don't know if he's got the side to side, but they lost Bazemore and Oubre. We've mentioned this before. They just need people to get those kinds of minutes. Like, just go bug the best player on the other team for 7 minutes and make sure that Steph or Jordan Poole don't have to do it. It's amazing we're saying, like, oh my God, you have to save Jordan Poole's energy because he's so good. Marcus has talked this into reality.
Be honest though, I was looking up last year pieces, and I remember this on the pod. We kind of talked about this a lot last year that Jordan Poole was making this.
Oh no question. Oh no, it was like, yeah. Yeah. I mean,
I mean, it's been a while, but we've been on the Jordan Poole for a while.
The big thing was when he was dominating the bubble. I think he was like, you know, second or third in the scoring in the bubble, and Brad Wanamaker's slump was just worsening by the game. It was like, just try to use Jordan Poole. You know, it was like, let's see what you might have got.
And remember, it was Poole and Wiseman. Like, can you put those two guys together? Because maybe gets a better Wiseman and a better Poole, and then you win two ways. Now, we'll see what happens with Wiseman. But I think that's what we were saying. Like, this could be an unlocking of a certain kind of second unit that they certainly, I mean, the Wanamaker second unit was just horrendous. I mean, that was the problem, is like the first unit was terrible because Wiseman and Oubre were dragging it down, and the second unit was terrible because Wanamaker could not shoot.
Poole or just was play make at all. I mean, he just couldn't create, which, you know, I thought that was kind of poor usage from a coaching standpoint. But, you know, I think Steve Kerr's really shown a lot of urgency in this preseason.
Chasing preseason wins.
I mean, Steph Curry played 30 minutes the other night. But, I mean, just the way they've, like, really prioritized the veterans in the rotations, they've tried to see if Bradley can, you know, kind of, like I said, win that spot. But also, I just feel like he's trying to get the team as ready as possible to win a bunch of games early. Because I feel like they, if you've seen their early season schedule, obviously they start off with a tough one in L.A. But, and really their second one's tough too, home opener against the Clippers. But after that, two road games at Sacramento, at Oklahoma City. I mean, those are two not great teams. And then they have an 8-game homestand early in the season that includes Memphis, Thunder, Charlotte, New Orleans, Houston, Minnesota, Chicago. Like, if they're ready early on and if they're playing a style that's difficult to guard, they could jump out to a nice record early on. And that really, I think, just eases the pressure around the season, because we all know, like, there's pressure points everywhere heading into the season, including, like, you know, they don't want to rush Clay back, but there might be a point if the situation's getting kind of tense in December that they're like, you know, how soon is he ready? So I do think you're seeing from a coaching perspective them being like, they need to sprint out of the gate.
They feel like, okay, yeah, we don't want to put any pressure on Clay, don't want to get into that world. And also they had the 15-5. It's like that picked that up, that feeling, not a desperation, but something close to it, like urgency. Like, this is, we've got to be. And with Steph at his best, make sure Steph is highlighted and make sure this is perfect for him and Draymond. And that can't be a slow thing to start the season. It's got to be immediate, I think, in their minds. Maybe part of their minds is like, you know, also, like, let's get some wins before we have to work Wiseman back in, because there might be a little clunky at that point. I'm not saying that's on the top of their minds, but it won't be their
ideal. Jeez, look how you're doing the number two pick.
It's not their ideal formulation at this point to work Wiseman in. Now, they've got to. They must do it. But I don't think in the coaching staff's mind, figuring out what to do with Wiseman is exactly how they want to run this. Now, he's so talented, they have to. But, like, what was I saying all offseason, even before we knew that he was going to miss training camp? He is not starting center. He is not the starting center. There is no way Steve Kerr projects James Wiseman.
He needs to win the starting center job, and he'd have to do that with what I am hearing at the start is going to be more of a second unit role with Poole, mostly when Steph and Draymond are off the court. That's a way to, because those will, regardless of how good Poole looks, that's still the Warriors' worst minutes, you know, going into the season. I think that's a solid plan to try to see what you have. Now, they might send him to the G League again, like Santa Cruz practices, get up to speed, and they'll see.
Santa Cruz what he comes Warriors back plus minus.
There you go.
Kuminga and Wiseman on that team, man.
Santa Cruz Warriors plus money. Yep, that's all funny. Big. Slater, who guards the opposing star guards? They got to deal with it. And if they don't use the 15th spot, they're basically saying, we'll figure it out another way.
I think there's two options. I think Andrew Wiggins can be capable. They like Andrew Wiggins much more as a one-on-one defender than like a team wing. But he's makes more sense, like, hey, they're playing the Clippers. He makes more sense on Paul George than he does Portland against Damian Lillard. Opening night, you know, he's on LeBron. He's not on Russell Westbrook. I do think there's an increasing trust level in Steph Curry in individual matchups, just as a defender to hold his own.
Wasn't he guarding Lillard in the preseason game?
They were switching up a lot. They would bring Bradley in. But I believe to start the game.
He did last year, too. He did last year for a
bit. I'm trying to remember, but I believe to start the game they went Poole on Norman Powell, Curry on Lillard, and Wiggins on McCollum.
And normally Steph would guard Norman Powell, right? That would be where Steph would be in another.
I don't think the issue is Steph's been the same kind of defender he is, which is, you know, pretty good in several areas. The issue was last year, especially, is you just literally cannot afford him in foul trouble. You're done if he gets two fouls early. That's ball game. Now they could probably stomach it more, right? Now you got more. To be able to, if Steph gets in foul trouble, like, the game's not over. Because before it was Brad Wanamaker coming in or Bazemore. Yeah, yeah. Or, you know, now if Jordan Poole's running the show while Steph is in foul trouble, that's probably a more tenable situation.
One of the concerns would be, like, you're going to tire Steph out. If you give him the Damian Lillard matchup, that might tire him out. But I think they've come to believe, you know what tires him out more? If he's out there with nobody that can score. And he's getting three guys on him, and he's getting frustrated, and he's keep getting double teamed at half court. So I think they believe what Poole does for Steph offensively will ease his load a lot more than if you get him off a defensive matchup. And the analytics, which, you know, Steve Kerr's mentioned a couple times, tell him that Poole and Curry worked last year. That was their best two-man combination. I think it was 200-something minutes. They were plus 17, plus 18 net rating. So he's been led to believe that combo worked, even if, like, in his basketball brain tells him not to have two, you know, offense first guards who are exploitable defensively out there. So they're okay with it. And if you're okay with that, I think you got to be okay with Steph guarding some of the main guys. And in this league where offenses are just going to score regardless, essentially, you're trying to outscore teams. Oh, you know, Lillard could have a nice game and you could still beat Portland.
And then you make Lillard have to guard Steph. I mean, that's basically, it's been the way Portland's done it. Again, they haven't won any championships, but they've done it that way. Like, you okay, go guard our guy, you know? I mean, we're going to put as many offensive guys out on the court, and you go guard us. And also, Steph, the Warriors tell Steph, don't reach. You got to give up the layup. Do not reach.
Steph might be old enough to listen now.
I don't know. Like, yeah, all right, man,
go ahead. You go score. That pride. Yeah. The pride might be subsided a bit where he's like, all right, Lillard.
Well, here's the other thing, though. Like, where does Steph, like, teams always want to, like, you know, get Steph switched on the big guy, right? They always, maybe not Portland. That's the wrong thing. But, like, you know, he's.
Like the Lakers.
Yeah, like, he's okay. He's okay there, though. Like, I mean, like, just. They're okay with that. Instead of just fearing that, just say, okay, that's the way it goes. If it happens, don't foul. Play tough. Stuff is fine on, you know, team defense, and go back and hit a three on them on the other side. Like, you know, it doesn't seem like, you know, I do think things have changed. It used to be, oh my God, who's going to, you know, we got to put Steph on this, you know, bad small forward, have Draymond and, you know, other guys pieces together on defense and then go outscore them, you know, and not crazy, terrible defense, but. This is the way you can win a lot of games in the NBA.
Dynasties, a new book that takes a journey through the history of the NBA from the lens of its greatest teams. Dynasties, it carves out the 10 GOAT teams that changed the NBA forever, looking at their star players, the villains they had to overcome, their impact on society at the time, and their lasting contributions to basketball. Want to know the 10 teams? Hint, there is one surprise. Want to learn about the golden eras and the shoulders on whom the NBA stands? Want to relive the moments and central figures in the dynasties you watch live? Then get your copy of Dynasties now. Featuring gorgeous art by Yuming Huang, Dynasties is a perfect addition to your bookshelf or coffee table, or even a collector's item to gift to NBA fans in your life. Remember the legends. Appreciate the dominance. Indulge in Dynasties. Available wherever books are sold.
It's the value of Draymond too. It's like, you know, problem solved, Draymond. You know, this is why you're still getting paid 20-something million. It's to basically what Rudy Gobert does in Utah is drags Utah to a great defense every year, even though, like, you know, they don't have stoppers all over the floor. So Draymond just, and Looney, you know, Looney's still out there. You're still in the modern NBA having you're tilting two of your players more towards defense, which a lot of teams don't even do two. So, yeah, I mean, like, you could scheme up and Draymond can run a scheme that can stop an offense.
And enough. This is, again, the value of Wiggins, because he can't, I mean, like, if you had Steph, this has been some of the problems other teams have is, okay, you can't guard the perimeter guys, but also can't guard the great small forward. You've got to guard one of those positions, and the Warriors have Wiggins to do it. Again, this is the, I don't want to say the genius of it, but this is the way that they got an acquisition for Durant in D'Angelo Russell and then got Wiggins for D'Angelo Russell and Kuminga. I know Marcus ripped the Warriors all up and down for that, but it turned out okay.
Talking
about, you know, when Wiggins was the possibility of him not playing home games and, oh, just get rid of him. And I understood that. Again, he's had the shot, so he's fine now, but even amid that discussion, there is no possible way for the Warriors to replace Andrew Wiggins. That was the whole point of this. He fits what they do. They're willing to pay him $32 million a year because there's no other way to get a guy who can go guard LeBron and be decent at it. He was decent at it last season and maybe score 16 points a game. And it, within the construct of what you do, not demand the ball, get some deflections, get some rebounds, do all those things. That's very valuable. If they didn't have, like, let's just put it this way. If they didn't have Wiggins on this team with Steph and Jordan Poole as your guards, there would be some issues.
They'd have Ben Simmons.
Okay, well, that might be better. But, yeah, it would be Otto Porter as your
starting. Speaking of, that's what I wanted to ask. Was, like, can Otto Porter guard?
Yeah, you start asking that, though. You start asking that. You're looking for a pulled
no answer. He's pretty stiff.
He plays like he's not in shape even though he looks like he is in shape. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, because he's got leg issues.
He moves like a guy who's not in shape.
He's like dough on the floor a couple times now. He did it again the other night. Got
the
a
Warriors
loose ball.
Want him to be Duncan Robinson. Let's just say, I mean, that's what they want him to be, and a little more.
Less like movement, like more of a catch and shoot guy, like Duncan Robinson does, like JJ Redick style, like run the baseline.
Not that, but just the guy that the defense has to go, oh my God, he's got the ball, and rushed to him like they, like, you know, as you documented earlier at the time when two guys ran at him and left Steph alone on the wing. Those sorts of things. And shoot, you know, 50% from three from the corner. Just be that guy from the corner. Those shots are always there in the Warriors offense. Oubre got them. Bazemore got them. They're just there. And be one of the best guys in the league at shooting the corner three. And then hope he does some other stuff. I think you start playing Otto Porter in a very important way. You're asking for him to get hurt. You're just asking for something to not be right. And I just play him 15 minutes a game and let him shoot three corner threes a game and maybe one or two other shots. And I think they'd be fine with that. And they should be. They're getting him for the minimum. They're getting him for $1.7 million. This would be just fine for them.
They ran a lineup late in the first half of the Lakers game with Porter, Bielitsa, Poole, Draymond, Steph. That was like, you know, extreme spacing. And then like the Steph, Draymond pick and roll down the middle with Poole as kind of like a second side playmaker. And it looked really good. They ended the half 8-0 in like 2 minutes. Like, you know, it was like a tie game, or I think they had a 2-point lead and they went into half up 10 and almost up 13. Porter like rimmed out a wide open corner three in the final possession. And it was like, you know, we talked about it a little bit post game. You know, we talk about this like offense first approach. That lineup for stretches could be really explosive if they survive defensively. Bielitsa's had some errors. We mentioned Porter's kind of stiffness, but they did in that game. I mean, some of that was because Russell Westbrook, I think, had 0 points and 8 turnovers in the first half, but it looked good the first time Curry used it together.
If they're on together, like that's a blitz. That's a 14-2 run in a heartbeat if they're on, because it's gonna be three, you know, transition three, layup three, and it'll be all over the court. The problem is when they're not on.
What I liked about it, there was a play where Steph's off ball and he's doing one of his, like, you know, scattering around. He's doing a pin down screen. I think Carmelo was in the mix, so they thought they could exploit Carmelo. And Steph seems like he's getting a cut wide open, and LeBron reads it, because LeBron reads all of Steph's stuff off ball really well. So LeBron jets over to stop the Steph cut. But guess what? LeBron's not guarding Kelly Oubre anymore. LeBron's guarding Otto Porter. So Draymond just swings it to Porter, who LeBron has left to guard the Steph action. Porter hits an open corner three. And it's like, you know, that works better than last year when LeBron would just freelance, because you could put him on, you know,
he knew, Oubre. Yeah. He's back there reading the plays, playing safety.
Just think about, like, you know, you got a team coming in on a back-to-back and they're tired, and then the Warriors...
They don't want to chase the perimeter like that.
The Warriors start doing that, and the game's game over. You know, it's like, you get the Nuggets coming in after they play the Clippers.
How many wins will they get like that?
That's like the old, like, you know, how many wins the Nuggets got in the old... I guess because they played so fast in the old days. You just get free wins sometimes. And the Warriors haven't got many of those lately, just because it's been so hard for them to put together reliable offensive units. And I think this is going to get them some free wins. It got them free wins. You know, Slater mentioned some bad teams, but, you know, the Nuggets, they beat the Nuggets at Oracle at the end of last season. I mean, what arena is this? It's Chase Center. Oracle is the baseball team now. But, you know, it's going to get them some tired teams coming into Chase Center are just going to get wiped off the court, just going to get blown off. Now, that means the Warriors are going to have some tougher times on the road, I think, when teams are fired up and opponents are yelling at them. But I think this is going to be 5 to 10, kind of almost not free wins, but wins that you're just going to be able to count on if you just play with a certain rhythm at home. And they did not have those certainly last two seasons.
Slater, got anything else?
I'm watching the Peyton attempt to try to steal this roster spot in the last week or here. So does Bradley lose it? Does Joe Lacob just declare it?
Does Joe Lacob win it?
they might keep it open to start. This is what it's feeling like, and then have Peyton available, you know, to grab at some point. And, you know, if someone else grabs them, fine, but that's not likely at this point. And just keep it open for now. You know, I think it's kind of a dodge, and I think maybe
the
Warriors veterans will feel like it's a dodge, but
I don't know, TK.
They just feel like it's pointing
Lakers,
out.
Clippers, Kings, Ja, Lonzo, Trey, right? It's a lot of guards coming in the first.
I think they should just have a 15th roster spot. It's easy for me to say, but this is a company that's making a lot of money. They have talked about how they'll do everything to win games. And if it comes, they spent $70 million for Kelly Oubre last season. you can spend $9 million because it's the minimum times five, or, you know, $8.5 million it would take to have a 15th roster spot. If you're Steph Curry, I'm sure you think that. You absolutely think that.
It's weird because I feel like I would be saying two things at once right here, but it's like, I do think you should carry in Avery Bradley or Peyton, but at the same time, we'll see with Peyton. But what I've seen from Avery Bradley, I'm also like, you mentioned all these games they're playing early in the season. I don't think they should necessarily have Avery Bradley in their rotation early in the season. Like, just from what I've seen, I get the idea of Bradley, and Bradley's better than absolutely nothing, which would be your empty spot.
Especially with Clay as an empty spot. Like, yeah. You know, Clay is not.
And, you know, Wiseman's an empty spot early on. Yeah, Kuminga is sure, kind of
sure,
an empty spot.
Yeah, for sure, Clay. What they also could say is, hey, you know, we're waiting to see if Wiseman's back, and if Wiseman's not back soon, we're going to need a center, and let's keep that spot open for a center. I guess I can understand that.
But the spot will always be open. You're signing a dude to a non-guaranteed contract. You let him go whenever you want. Fill in and go
get center. Yeah, but that's who's that, though? Who are you letting go?
Oh, the 15th spot. Yeah, you keep Bradley on a non-guaranteed.
You can flip that. You can flip that. You're right. I just think it would be a good gesture to the two most important players on the team, and who have been the most important players on the team for a great run, that you say, you know what, I don't want to do it, but $8 million for a guy, potentially we can still move off of him, who can help 5 minutes a game, every other game, it's worth it. It's worth it, the commitment to you guys to do this. I think that would be a good move.
Yeah, and you're not locked in for the whole year, so it ain't made up. But if you do it for the first couple months of the season, if that person isn't playing well, you walk away. You let them go. It's easier to do it that way to me. To start with the 15th spot, prove like, see, we don't need this. It's not working. And now you're only $3 million in instead of 8.5, whatever. But you at least did it. To me, that's better. But most importantly, like we've been talking about the guards, it feels like every dominant guard in the league, they're playing them to start. So at least if nothing else, you got somebody you can put on a guy. Like, even if it's Avery Bradley. Like, Avery Bradley isn't in your rotation. But you can say, hey, man, this game, we just want you harassing Trae Young for 10 minutes. This game, Ja Morant dropped 40 on us in a play-in game. Let's give him a different look. Avery Bradley, go, right? Like, not so that might be worth it just for that alone, because they're seeing all these guys in the first part of the season.
They open up and somebody goes off on Steph. Steph gets three fouls. And then, so who do they put on him? Who do they put on him in that situation?
It's JTA. Andre.
JTA. I mean, that's not ideal. That's just not ideal. Just that in your head, I think, says, just start off the season. And Marcus, you got it right. It's like, this doesn't mean that they have to keep 15th spot all season. It might keep it for a month. It might keep it for 3 weeks. And that, as a gesture to their veterans, after not using the taxpayer mid-level, after not, you know, after doing a lot of things to try to save some money here and there.
Traded player exception.
Traded player, that would be disabled player exception. Didn't use that, would be a good move. Again, they're spending tons of money. And there's no question they're spending, again, as everyone says, they're paying more luxury tax this season than other teams have on their payroll.
But fans are back in Chase Center, and concerts are back at Chase Center. Chase Center was actually a good environment in the Laker game. It was filled up, and it was energized. It was Friday night. You had the Bay versus LA two times, you know, down the road. They were showing Giants highlights during timeouts, and the crowd was going nuts. There was a bunch of beat LA chants. Like, it felt like they want Chase Center to feel this year, and it was the first time. It didn't feel, like, sterile in there in a long time. So it's just something to note as we talk about their money.
You got downtown kind of.
You know, Gotts is open. Gotts is cranking.
Gotts up. Miller and Lux. Miller, the steakhouse is open.
Oh, it is. That's right.
I can see Slater in a boot.
They're getting some rent down there now, finally. You know, somebody's paying rent down there.
About time. I just want to say this, but no other comment than that. But it's about, somebody's been waiting for those restaurants.
Let's get those afternoon games going so I could definitely have some nighttime in Miller and Lux. But if I'm getting out of the arena at midnight, I mean, how late do they even stay open?
Last I've heard, the last reservation is 11 p.m. So that means the bar's going to be open pretty late, I think. I may have been discussing this with some games. Warriors.
Hey, 5:30 p.m. Saturday, October 30th, against the Thunder, Slater. Dinner on you.
Giants World Series Game 3 might be in there somewhere, but that's okay.
Two observations off the Warriors game.
That's what you got to get through Max first.
But no, it's good. Good to have fans back, that's for sure. And I think there's a lot of interest in this team. You sense that, Slater, just from your interaction?
Oh, yeah.
Just think people are really... 9,000 fans to a workout. I mean, that told me something right
there. Yeah, that was Oracle-level days right there. That was... Yeah.
Yes, exactly. It wasn't like dreary, oh, yeah, we'll cheer for staff. Isn't that great? It was like... the legitimate interest in this team.
Yeah, and I think there's growing optimism that, yeah, you know, they did build this well around Steph. Even if they didn't do the home run trade, like, this should be a fun style of play that should lead to plenty of regular season wins, even if they may have capped themselves at a non-title contender. Depends on, you know, Clay a lot. But, you know, they could have taken a bigger swing that would make us believe that they could actually win a title. I'm sitting here, I would not pick them to win a title. But... there's something to be said for 50 regular season wins, or, you know, a lot of energy, a four seed type season. And I think there's starting to be more belief that they could be that type of regular season, like fun time, 41 nights a year.
And Steph signed a $250 million contract extension, which helps.
Yes, it always does. But they're trying to be the Portland Trail Blazers. Like, you know, again,
just for this year. Don't let them hear you say that. Just for this year, they want to be Trailblazers.
I'm gonna tell Joe Lacob, you're just trying to be the Portland
Trailblazers. They're in the playoffs. They want to go back to being the Warriors when they make the playoffs. So.
Yes, yes. And they probably will if they're playing the Portland Trailblazers. Maybe not anybody else. But it's a decent way to piece this together for them. And then they wait for Wiseman and Clay. And then we'll see what Moody and, you know, Kuminga can give them whenever that is. But it's an interesting, you know, again, it's a two-way go. Like, try to everything they can to try to win as many games as they can, scramble around, maybe not the greatest postseason feel to it, but then they've got some other things they can plug in where they feel good about what that might look like in either this postseason or postseasons to come.
Season preview pod next week.
Next full week. We kind of
did a little preseason preview here, but that's okay. We can come up with more stuff.
Oh, we will. This will be a fuller one.
Plenty.
And we were looking at each other during this podcast for the first time. So if it feels like better, then it's because we actually...
If it feels better, you got to attribute that to Marcus Thompson, who had to prod his podcast partners to actually turn on their cameras. TK had to take the tape off and violate his Edward Snowden vibes to join us on the Zoom.
I like my video privacy, but for the purpose of this, on the prodding of Marcus Thompson, we actually got to see each other while we're doing the podcast.
All right, we're out of here. Thanks for listening. It's a great time out!